You're listening to Distraction Therapy with Rob Watson. Conversations about how we find meaning in our lives and what it's like to be part of a meta-modern world. Hello, Rob Watson here, and I've been giving some thought to how to develop distraction therapy and what these programs and podcasts are about. And what I thought I wanted to do is to move towards a more regular discussion about the nature of metamodernism, the kind of world that we're moving into. And to explore some of the issues that are associated with a sense of what the metamodern world is about. So I want to do that by getting out and about, visiting places, talking to people, having conversations, exploring ideas, and looking at how things work. And so I will look at kind of things going on in a culture, art, music, entertainment, whatever that form that takes. And also to try and use some of the approaches that come out of arts and culture to develop these sound walks, sound conversations, all of those kind of things. So metamodernism it's been described as that which comes after postmodernism. And I think a really good phrase that kind of sticks in my mind, and I repeat this a lot, is something there's an author called Hansi Freinacht, and it's actually, it's a pseudonym. Off the top of my head, I can't remember who the author is, but I'll put a link in with the program notes. And he talks about, he says, after the deconstruction must come the reconstruction. And I think that's a really nice way of phrasing it. So with postmodernism, what we've done is we've deconstructed the world around us. We've shown the limits of culture, the limit of rationality, the limit of society. And what metamodernism asks is what goes, you know, what do we do next? Because the danger is that we just give in to a kind of open, facile kind of nihilism where, you know, to use that phrase about free-floating signifiers, that, you know, everything just becomes something that can be branded and marketed, and the kind of endless reinvention of ourselves and the endless playing with our identity, rather than actually discovering what our, and being true or being genuine as to what our character is, and who we are as individuals, as social groups, as communities, as a body of people who have traditions and acquired wisdom and a collective knowledge which we pass on and share with others. So metamodernism kind of adds a dimension to postmodernism, to say that it's not just all about an empty, hollow kind of shell where all you can do is play with how appearances, play with how things look. But instead, there is a deeper dimension there. Some people might call it a spiritual dimension. Others might call it a kind of journey into the self, where we get to know and feel and have a feel for and to understand the kind of inner workings of which can't be described purely in external tick box kind of characteristics by our demographics, if you like. But we have to kind of tune into each other's the kind of more archetypal roots that we share as cultures, And particularly it's more important at the moment because we've entered a stage of our development where we're in a globalised world. And that's very new to us. The late 20th century, you know, the postmodern period is characterised by the idea of globalisation. Everything under, you know, MTV, Nike, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, those kind of things. So, yeah, we want to do a bit of thinking about this, and I thought I'll use these walks and conversations just as a way of kind of starting to identify some stuff that might be of interest. But let's see.
Thank you.
So I suppose if we're wondering what the deal is with metamodernism, we want to put it in a bit of a context. And the simplest way that I can explain this is we live in a world of signs and images. That's the kind of postmodern approach, where we think about the world as kind of a mediated space for us, where we kind of almost like kind of photocopies. You know that phrase, authenticity? It's kind of been hijacked to be something which kind of suggests maybe that you can reinvent yourself as something authentic. But we all know that once you've learned to fake like sincerity, once you've learned to fake authenticity, you've kind of got it made. And we see that, you know, on social media a lot. You know, it's a performance. It's something which is about, you know, presenting ourselves in a particular way. But that isn't really who we are. And I'm drawn to the idea, and what metamodernism does is it kind of said, hang on a minute, there's got to be something more foundational than that. There's got to be something which is not just of the present day, not just superficial today, but is inherited from a long tradition, the antecedents, the past experience of previous generations in our culture. And we forget our ancestors and the role and the culture of our ancestors at our peril, because in a way, one, it's been established over a long period of time, but two, it leaves us unmoored. It leaves us feeling, you know, we're at the mercy and the whim of things that kind of seem seductive, but there's no real value to them. So we end up walking through shops that are full of endless, you know, kind of plastic tat. And there's a fun in there, but, you know, it isn't sustainable, and it isn't culturally... I don't feel it's culturally nourishing, and a lot of people don't feel it's culturally nourishing. So the element of depth that we're looking for, meaning, is to be found in not just in things like our sciences, which, you know, have given us incredible advances, have helped us to really shape and remake the world, you know, rational thinking and scientific thinking and practice and investigation. It's just, you know, it's kind of really, you know, we've had an explosion of the living conditions that we have in modern society for a large, not for everybody, but for a large number of people, are insurmountable. You know, they're kind of incomprehensible to people living 200 years ago, for example, you know, medicines, digital technology, transport technology, the energy production, agriculture. These things are, you know, they've transformed our world in a very short period of time. It's only 100 years ago that manned flight was, you know, the Wright brothers was, you know, was that was only really, you know, just over 100 years ago that came about. But we learn our lessons about the world from two other factors, which are the so that would be the logos. The other factor would be the eros, the feelings that we have. And, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to accommodate ourselves to the world through our feelings and understanding our emotions. But there's a third factor, which is the sense that we share common stories, and we share these archetypal stories, the mythos. And we might think that we live in a world that, you know, has put behind us mythological thinking, but you've only got to go to the cinema, you've only got to go to, you know, stream something on Netflix, or, you know, kind of, you know, watch people on YouTube, and our stories that inform us are told time and time and time again. We live in a mythological world. When times feel tough, what do? We reach for fantastical things, and that's what nourishes us. So the metamodernism is kind of a way of trying to accommodate both of those things, all three of those things, which is the logos, the logical, the rational, the eros, the kind of felt relationships, the emotional relationship, but also the mythological, how we put it in a context of stories of fate, stories of heroics, stories of the Mother Nature, those kind of things. They're all part of how we approach and accommodate the world.
Hi, my name's Tracy. We are currently sitting in my studio in the West End of Leicester. We are surrounded by all my artwork and the bits and pieces that I use to make all of those things. I'd say, firstly, I'm a sculptor of fantastical creatures that are inspired by nature and they're like sort of pixie fairy, Harry Potter-ish, but they look realistic. They look like they could actually be alive. Okay, so that's my job. And then I also paint emotive pictures. The main character is a little girl in a red dress, and she started with a big hole, because we all have a hole, and a ball of string, and the ball of string is love, and how she fills up the hole and what she does with the string. So that's, and then I also do watercolors, which comes, that's a brand new thing. And that's just very free and easy and soft. Yeah, I'd say that's the main, that's what. So firstly, I was a street seller and in Athens, and I started making small pieces of jewelry. I still like making jewelry. I like making anything out of anything. And I was inspired by all the other sellers and what they were making. I was a bit on the hustle, like seeing what sold and going with that. And with regards to, oh, the with regards to the fantasy creatures, there's an artist called Brian Froud, and I've liked him since I was a teenager. So I made his paintings into realistic figurines. And then, as I got older, the little girl in the red dress, I would say, would be inspired by Oliver Jeffers. He's a children's illustrator, but he's more than that. He now does very evocative. They look like they're cartoons, but there's much more to them behind the story. Yeah, he's been my main influence. It's showing our emotions and our vulnerability, and that it's okay. That it's okay to be okay. I don't like that saying, because it's not okay to be okay. It's not okay to not be okay, because we all want to be okay. But to evoke an emotion and a... When I was younger, it was definitely all imagination based, and I lived in my head. So everything was drawn from my own imagination. I had a whole entire world that I resided in. I was like hiding away from reality, basically. And then the other part of me, I'll pick something up off the street. It can be a nut, a bolt, a piece of wood, and then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna do that, and I'm gonna wrap wire around it, and I like, so this idea comes. But the little girl in the red dress, I'll pick like a word for, I'll just pick a dictionary page and then look for a word on it and see an emotion and then paint that emotion. So say volatile, I'll have her having a volcano exploding out the top of her head, or confused will be a whole load of string and lines all jumbled together. Yeah. I'm usually listening to a podcast, so I'm thinking about, it's just coming through me. I don't so much think about it as I'm doing it, unless I've had an idea in my head, like I've been in the bath and I have to catch it and then I have to get it out. Then it's like, oh, I've got to get it out as soon as possible. So that's like, there's a Greek word for it, ektonosi, and it's like, get your stuff out. And there are those moments as well. I always have to have some sort of balance, even if it's an irregular balance. I like a balance in the picture, so I work on that. It has to be visually pleasing as well as... That's the most important thing, actually, is for it to be visually pleasing. I want it to be on the wall. I want somebody to look at it and for them to get joy from looking at it. The best moments in life are when you connect with a person. You don't need anything more than that connection in that moment. You don't need a drink, a cigarette, nothing. You just want that connection. And when you've done a piece that's truthful, people will connect with it. And it doesn't actually have to be joy. It can actually be... I've seen people cry at my work, and it's to touch them. I started off, I'd say, an island unto myself. I don't fit into any particular genre, but I wanted to be part of the community and I wanted to meet other artists. So there's a woman called Emma Fitzpatrick. She's brilliant. She's very good at starting up groups and getting people to meet with each other. And because of her, I went to a sketch group, Cozy Club, in, it's not in the West End, but still. Sometimes I'll just sit on my doorstep, you know, and let people walk past. And you can see an interesting person, you're like, hello, you know, and just to have the same again, that connection with people. The West End itself doesn't influence my art in any way. But I like the multicultural, different ages kind of part of it, and I'm hoping through this art trail that I'm doing to connect more people together, the different cultures, the different, you know, let's start small, let's not go out, oh, I'm going to change, you know, the West End with this, but maybe, you know, if you touch 10 people, that's enough. So during lockdown, I was sitting in my workshop and I would put some stuff, I'd put like a little scene in my window, you know, just to give something to people as they walk past. And then I was like, oh, it'd be a nice idea to open up my studio. So yeah, I've had the idea for quite a while now, and I saw that it was Leicester Art Week, so I put my idea out there to them, and they were like, great. I was like, well, would it be good if there were other people? And they were like, yeah, yeah, fantastic, if you can get hold of people. So, I mean, trying to get a bunch of artists to do anything is like herding cats. But I reached out, and I've got a group of us now. And it's great because they're all different, you know. So one of them makes furniture, another one's into printmaking. We've all got different... skill sets, I feel. And yeah, it's a small group of us. It's only 8 of us, but it's enough as a start. Mainly I know them from the urban sketches, and Emma helped me get some people. I had an idea in my head. There's quite a few artists on our street, and I had an idea of who I wanted, and actually none of them are doing it. Only one of them, John Cook, he's amazing. He does all sorts of different graphics, but he does these aerial views of Leicester through the ages, which is amazing. So I'm excited to see that.
If I could be anything in the world that flew, I would be a bat and come swooping after you. And if the last time you were here things were a bit askew, well, you know what happens after dark. When rattlesnakes lose their skins and their hearts, and all the missionaries lose their bark, oh, all the trees are calling after you, and and all the venom snipers after you. Are all the mountains bolder after you? If I could be any one of the things in this world that bite, instead of a dentured ocelot on a leash, I'd rather be a kite and be tied to the end of your string and flying in the air, babe, at night. 'Cause you know what they say about honey bears. When you shave off all their baby hair, you have a hairy-minded pink bear. And all the bells are rolling out for you, and stones are all erupting out for you, and all the cheap bloodsuckers are flying after you. Yesterday, Daisy, May, and Biff were grooving on the street, and just like in a movie, her hands became her feet. Her belly button was her mouth, which meant she tasted what she'd speak. Woo! But the funny thing is what happened to her nose. Ooh, it grew until it reached all of her toes. Ooh, now when people say her feet smell, they mean her nose. And curtains laced with diamonds, dear, for you. And all the Roman noblemen for you. And kingdoms, Christian soldiers, dear, for you. And melting ice-capped mountaintops for you. Oh, and knights in flaming silver robes for you. And bats that will the kiss turn prince for you. Swoop, swoop. Oh, baby, rock, rock. Swoop, swoop.
You won't believe, on this street there's so many. Lars Anderson is down at the bottom. You see, everyone's really busy because it's Leicester Art Week. People are doing their own things in their own, you know, in different studios and stuff. So, and like I said, like herding cats. You know, we need a space in Leicester that has a feel to it. You know, that has a whole vibe to it. Like, I don't know if you've ever been to Graphworks by the canal. Like, that region, you know, there's a whole new thing building up there. And it would be so nice if there was a cafe and a gallery and something where we could all do projects together. Because that's what's wrong in Leicester. The different people from sculptors and photographers, and they don't do anything collaborative, and we need that. You inspire each other, and then you inspire other people by that. It's like a ripple effect, and it opens up people's imaginations. It makes the place more beautiful. It makes people respect their space. They want to make it look nice, because when you're in a beautiful place, it makes you feel good. Look, we're one of the poorest cities in England, and it shows. It shows. There's a lot of poverty. There are a lot of beggars. There are a lot of homeless people. So that is a bit scary. You know, even though I come from Joburg, there isn't that same kind of vibe. It's like... Yeah, and people are not, they're not open to each other and helpful. Whereas in Johannesburg, everyone, you pass each other in the street and you say hello. And if you want help from something, you can go to somebody's workshop and go, hi, like, can I cut a piece of wood? And they're like, yeah, sure, like, come have lunch with me. It doesn't work like that over here. Maybe I'm going past the wrong workshops. But, you know... It's taken me 15 years to meet people and find where. Now I'm finding my feet. You know, boy, in the last 5 years, I've like found my feet a bit more and joined people together and been invited to certain things. But yeah, it took a while. You can't moan about a problem if you're not, you know, fix it, do it yourself. If no one else is doing it, and that's what we need. We need more people who are fixing it and making it happen instead of moaning about it. I think I'm going to be buzzing from meeting. I love meeting new people. I love sharing my ideas and inspiring people. And making a bit of money even. That's not the priority, but it always helps. It's a way of showing that your work is appreciated. So you can go to West End Art Trail on Instagram and also on Facebook. There's maps which will show you the trail and the names of the different artists and pictures of what they do. And it's on Saturday, the 20th of November, so this coming Saturday, from 12 till 5.
Thank you.
I suppose one of the reasons that we work with artists is to kind of pull things out of our unconscious and shape, bring into view what we are thinking and how we, you know, how our world is emerging, what way it's heading. And that's both a process of concrete thinking. You turn something from into an object, but coupled with that is the, if you like, the psychological, the mythological ideas, feelings that inform how we want to present our ideas to the world, and we have to drag that into being somehow and turn it into something which can be seen and can be felt and can be listened to and can be shared, but we're still not quite clear what it is that we're trying to intimate, trying to explain, trying to move towards. And I think the idea of metamodernism is one of those ideas where we've got to kind of start to discuss this and accumulate some direction. Can you accumulate direction? But to give some direction to and to start to make sense of it, rather than just, if you like, dismissing things as being merely playful or dismissing things as merely transactional or dismissing things as simply a product of our identity as that's expressed in through our culture. Actually, it's deeper than that. There's that kind of deeper rooted shared experience which is archetypal, which goes into the shared common roots of our, of who we are as human beings, and how that is expressed through our culture, but also how that is built and created and reproduced anew for new generations. And we do that through art and culture and films and radio, and you know, it's kind of, how can we open this up? So I don't know, I'm just kind of trying to explore some ideas and think about how we can use a podcast to do this in a way which is a mix of different styles and approaches. So if you've got ideas, I'm always up for a conversation about them, and you know, always up for a coffee to have a chat, and maybe we can record it as a podcast and share it.
She walks, hear the way she talks.
You've been listening to Distraction Therapy with me, Rob Watson. Find out more at robwatsonmedia.net or follow me on Instagram and Twitter at robwmedia.